That's fine. And I don't bake bread anymore, anyway.
But I let my sourdough go. Tom Weaver's was 100 years old.
Oh, for goodness sake.
And when I worked at Empire, well, I did a whole sourdough book, and then I did a program on it. And the only sourdough that we had 60 there, the only one that didn't live was the one that decided to change the recipe, and she wanted it to live with honey instead of sugar. And, you know, those old sourdoughs, they like what they like to keep living. But, I think some sourdough stories are wonderful because it's actually true. They could keep those things going, couldn't they?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Well, we used to make bread with a starter, we call it. We never called it sourdough, but it had a starter, and you'd keep a little bit back and add a little more potato water and a little bit of sugar, and you'd keep that till the next time you're ready to bake bread.
Okay, so see, that's a potato. That'd be good. Mm-hmm. That'd be nourishing.
Yeah, we used potato water. We just boil a potato and mash it and drain that water off, and then put our sugar and a little bit of starter in it, and that'd make us our yeast for the next batch of bread, and then we just save a little bit of it back that way all the
time.
It's
good for you, isn't it? Mm-hmm. The intestines, it's better than just flour.
Well, I think it was.
It's a lot of work. Today, it seems like it would be a lot of work. But
well, it wouldn't be
road.
Worth it. Yes, it wouldn't be worth it for me because I don't eat very much bread, and I'm living alone, you know.
Yeah.
But not very many people bake bread anymore.
I know.
It's a shame.
And I like the homemade bread.
Oh, I love it.
There's just
That's
nothing
my problem.
Like it.
I like it too much. Let's see. What could we talk about now?
We talked about food, and how about schools?
Well, when they first came to school, when the Ellises first came here in 1883, there were no schools. I shouldn't say that. There was a school in Mangus Town, a little old log fort thing, back about where the bank is now.
Where the bank
The parking lot there was about where that little old log first schoolhouse was. But I remember Grandpa said that when he first came, George Bauer had a little store.
Way back then.
Yeah, in 1883. Well, see, he came in 1881 with burros loaded with merchandise to make a store. And it would have been located about where, as you first go into town from Weber, on your left-hand side of the road, if I remember right in there, just as you first go in, it was about where George Bauer's first store was.
Now, where did he come from?
He came from up around Del Norte and that way, but he had been up around Denver and all, and he had been quite a prospector and rather a businessman.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know too much about it. That's a long time ago, you know.
Right. Oh, I'm so glad I got to know these people.
But
did Johnny come with him, his brother, then, or had Jim and Johnny?
Well, not the Jimmy that you know.
Oh, it's their father.
It's their father's uncle.
Okay.
George Bauer came first.
Mm-hmm.
And then after he kind of got to his little store started and all, then he sent for his wife, and she came, and then they had children. They had a girl and a boy. And John and their son, John Bauer, became not the John Bauer that you know.
Okay.
That John Bauer became the father of, grandfather of Bill Bauer.
Marita.
All right, but then his brother Henry was an undertaker, and I had a copy, and it's in my book. I have a copy of the letter where he wrote back to his brother Henry asking him to come to Mancus. It was a good place to live and all. And so he came, and he set up an undertaker shop, and then he was the grandfather of Jim and John and Wayne and Byron and whoever all else there were. And so a lot of people, because the Bauer name was so prominent in the early days of the Mangus Valley, that everyone thinks that George Bauer was John and Jim's grandfather or whatever.
Right.
But anyway, when Papa first came, that's Vernon's father, in 83, he said George Bauer had a little store. There was a blacksmith shop down by the river and the little log fort where the kids went to school. And that was and there were a couple of houses. And that's what Mangus was when he came in 83. There were people living up and down the river, farmers, but no central little town then, see. The town wasn't organized as a town or incorporated until 94, which would have been 11 years after Papa came. There were a lot of people came into Mangus Valley between 1883 and 1894.
Why do you think that happened?
Well, people, there was a big slogan through the United States, go west, young man. People were pushing. They were looking for more. The east had got settled, and people were always looking at the greener pasture on the other side of the hill. I think that was part of it. And then people would write back to their brothers, their uncles, and so forth, and George Bauer had to his brother Henry. It's a beautiful country. It is a beautiful country.
Right. We're all living out here. Come on.
Right. And prospects look good. There were no markets, but there's no markets yet. But people come here to live.
Yeah.
But I think it was a trend at that time. People were moving to Oregon. They were moving to California, to Washington. And there was just a westward push, a lot of it. There were a lot of pioneers, a lot of people, good people, that came and settled in Mancos Valley between, say, 1885 and 1900. There were an enormous amount of people came in.
And some of their descendants are still here.
Oh, yes.
Isn't that wonderful?
Just you'd be surprised. I suppose I could sit down and just off the top of head, I could probably name 50. And then I'm sure there are a lot that I don't know,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I don't know everybody's great grandparents and so mm-hmm. forth, you know. And there was a lady here the other day, sat across right here, and we visited quite a while. And finally, she said, "Did you know anybody by the name of Smith here in Mancos years ago?" And I said, "Oh yes, my grandma's mother was Elizabeth Smith." She says, "We've got Elizabeth Smith. My kids have got Elizabeth Smith on there in their ancestry." Well, I don't know yet, because she doesn't know much more than that.
So
well,
exciting.
Anyway, then she said, well, the kids, see, she's divorced from her husband. So, but her kids want to know about that
mm-hmm.
side of their
mm-hmm.
family. But she doesn't know much. But she's going to find, and then she's going to come to me. But she said, "Well, did you never know anybody by the name of Black?" "No, I don't think so." And I couldn't think. But after she left, then I thought, well, and she said that he had worked for a flour mill. I said, the only flour mill in Mancos, other than a little grist mill when they first started Mancos, the only flour mill was Gillette's flour mill. I remember that when it burned down. I was there the night that it burned down. Mm-hmm. I wasn't at the flour mill. We were at the movie, Vernon and I, but we left the old black and white silent movie to go down and see that.
Mm.
Flour mill.
Now, where was the flour mill located?
At the west end of town, down about where that great big transformer business is at the west end of Mancos.
Okay.
Where all the electrical big thing is. You know where Van Willis lives?
Yeah.
Well, it was kind of just back in, right back in
right
there.
Right in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, how neat. Okay.
Well, anyway, she won't know. She said this Black that was her kid's relative far back somehow or other, he had worked for the flour mill in Mancos, and I said the only flour mill in Mancos had to be Gillette's flour mill. Well, she says, "Well, there, his name was Black, and he worked." And I said, "Well, they could very well have worked for Gillette's flour mill," but I couldn't think of the name Black at the time. After she left that night, in the night, I woke up. Well, sure enough, I remember there was Black. There was a Mormon, and it talked in some of the minutes or something that he had worked
at the flour mill.
Oh, isn't that neat? So, you know, there's people that have descendants here that we don't know anything at
mm-hmm.
all about.
Yeah.
And they're getting fewer and fewer, though. There used to be just hundreds of Deckers, it seemed like. Everywhere you turned around, there was a Decker, or there's a Hammond, or there's an Ellis, or a Halls. And they've moved away because they had to for educational opportunities, for jobs. And when they got married, they went wherever their mm-hmm. spouse was. And,
mm-hmm.
and so it hasn't left too many here. And anyway, that's the way it was. I'm glad I stayed.
That's nice. We got to where we had a blacksmith. And how did the town grow from there?
Well, I think after they got the school and the school enlarged, and there was people coming with a little more business. Oh, George Bauer made money enough in that first little, just an old bit of a shack that somebody had probably lived in overnight maybe or something, and that's where he'd set up his first little store. Well, he made business because there wasn't any place for men mm-hmm. to get tobacco or sugar or salt,
so all he had was like staples, like material and
yes
flour.
And then so then he set up a bigger store and called it George Bauer Mercantile Store, and had a store down in town, and I think the first one was about where the bank is now, his first George Bauer Mercantile Store. And then he started a bank. Well, if George Bauer really was a businessman, and he loaned money to people and would promise them if they would build a home on a certain lot in town, or on a lot in town, he would give them the lot if they would build a home and stay in Mancos. Well, it was good business for him. It was good business for the town. He was a good businessman.
That's great.
And then, of course, most of the big businesses in town up till 1910 were more or less under George Bauer's influence. I think he died in 1905. The building where Cook's Big Store,
Yes. That
was his building.
Now, do Cook's own that now?
No, I don't know who owns it. The bank
took it. I hope they leave it there.
The bank had to foreclose on
that.
That
should be restored
beautiful building.
It is.
They had the Bauer Mercantile. Then they had a big store just across the street. Oh, it's where all the old Harshmans and the carriages and the hardware store and so forth is now. Mm-hmm. Then they had a big Bauer built a big mercantile building there, and then that burned. And I remember when that burned down.
Mm.
And but he loaned the money to these other people to set up businesses, and he made money, and he knew how money mm-hmm. to make money. Money mm-hmm. is no good if you don't use it to make
right.
money.
Right, and
he
knew how to make these people want to stay and enjoy, mm-hmm. and the town would grow and be real healthy.
Right, and then after the railroad came through in 1893.
Now, where did the railroad come from?
The railroad came from Durango.
And where did it go in Mancos?
Oh, you didn't know we had a railroad?
No.
Oh, Trish, you're way behind the times.
I guess I am. Yeah, that's why I said, where'd the railroad go?
The railroad came into Mancos in 1891.
Oh,
and it came from Durango, on top of Mancos Hill.
Okay.
And on down and around, and came across the river up there east of town about where robins live.
Okay.
Came across the river there, I remember, and then followed down, and there went about where... Well, they call it Railroad Avenue now in town.
Oh, sure. Grandmother used to live on that.
Yes.
And that was where the railroad went.
And the railroad went by, and the depot was down about where that substation, electrical substation is, right along
and
there.
And that's down from Yeoman's, down to Match Factory?
Not on that street, no. See, okay. Railroad Avenue is right next to the highway.
Oh,
it's
okay.
A bypass.
Okay.
It's
okay.
A bypass.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And the depot was then down about where that electrical substation
oh,
is.
Oh, okay. I know where it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's where the depot
my
was,
gosh.
And the water tower there. And the train came in 1891, and that really helped Mancos because that brought in tourists who went to Mesa Verde, rode horses, or went in wagons or buggies with Gene Bader's grandparents. C.B. Kelly had the livery stable, and there were other people too, but anyway, they would meet the people at the train and take them uptown to the hotel or something, and then they'd take them on the 3 or 4 or 5 day trip up to Mesa Verde.
Oh, how, that's long ago. People were going to Mesa Verde. It's amazing.
Yeah, they started that probably, I don't know that he was there before 1900 with the livery stable, but somewhere around the turn of the century. Then the Wetherills had come in, and they had had the big Alamo Ranch, as they call it, which is off
okay.
right down through here.
Yeah, I know where that is.
And this, in fact, this land, piece of land here, the 160 acres that Vernon and I owned here, was homesteaded by Clayton Wetherill.
Mm-hmm.
He never built a building on it, but his is the first name, and we have a copy of that. I let G take that. That's his keepsake.
Oh, good.
But that was signed by whoever was president of the United States at the time. Benjamin Harrison? Was there a Benjamin Harrison?
Benjamin.
Well, I don't know. Anyway, whoever was president.
Yeah, I think there was. I think there was.
But anyway, it has Clayton Wetherill's
hand. Oh, I bet he'll treasure that.
But it was, it's quite a keepsake. But there was never any buildings on this place until Vernon and I moved down here in 1970. No, there was no ditches, there were no roads, there was nothing had ever been done at all, except just wood cut off and fence posts. So.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's see, how did I get on that? Well,
what happened to the train? I'm just here where the train got here.
Okay,
today.
Well, the train came in 1891. That made it possible for people to get on the train here in Mancos. They could ride the train to Durango in the morning, do their shopping, come back that night. Oh, it's convenient. I wish we had it today.
You mean, was Durango very big?
Oh, yes. Durango was much bigger than than Mancos at that time.
At that time.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't as big as it is now by any means.
No.
But it was a big, by 1891, Durango was a thriving town. And then people could go on. It went on to Dolores. Didn't go to Cortez. Went to Dolores. Then up at the canyon, just west of Mancos, about where Frank Nolan lives.
Okay.
Well, that little canyon that goes off
and
up that way.
And it went up that canyon?
It went up that canyon and went on to Dolores. And then it went on up to Rico.
Mm-hmm.
Telluride. And on around to...
Did it make the loop?
Made the loop.
Oh,
went on the Ridgeway, Silverton, and Durango.
And
you know,
back...
So you could make it... I don't know when the road went to Silverton. I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. I think it didn't come till later. I'm not positive about that. But anyway, there were many people who would get on the train to, if they wanted to go to Denver, Kansas City, somewhere. Mm-hmm. A lot of these people that were businessmen, had mm-hmm. little money, and they could take a trip on the train.
Now, what was the name of the train?
Durango.
Just plain
Durango? Durango Rio Grande Southern Railway.
I'll be darned.
DNRGW, we always called it. Huh. I had to stop and think what it stood for.
Oh, but that's great. How long did that stay in operation?
Well, it was in operation till in the 40s. We were married in 34, and it was there after we were married, because I can remember going to the depot and picking up baby chicks.
Oh.
After we were married. So it was sometime in the late 30s or early 40s that the railroad quit, because there just wasn't enough people.
Too many people had cars?
People had cars.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And trucks had come in to bring in things, and it was cheaper and quicker, more feasible. And then came World War II, and then after that, people were all crazy. Everybody had cars, and everybody had jobs. All the women went to work. And then, but for a while, after there was such an outpour of people who were angry that the railroad went out of business, that they used an old, I wanted to say Plymouth, but that wasn't what it was. It was a special maker car, Pierce Arrow. I believe it was they used the engines out of old Pierce Arrow cars, and somehow they made what they called the Galloping Goose.
Oh.
And it took, over in Dolores, in the park, there's a replica of the Galloping Goose.
Okay.
So that went on for, I don't know, maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 years, something like that. And then, of course, that then went out of business, too. But that was a big boost to Mancos when the railroad came.
Mm-hmm.
And
opened up communication.
Yes, right. And there was markets. See, there were lots of sawmills in the early part of the century. And they shipped out as much as 50,000 boxes to... up there near Denver, to the Cooner Pickle Company. 50,000 boxes shipped out in one load for them to put their cucumbers in.
To make pickles.
Uh-huh. But they made lots of boxes. Mm-hmm. Shingles were manufactured here at the old Exxon's shingle mill up there, way up east towards Echo Basin Ranch. And I think that there were as many as eight or ten sawmills in existence in Mancos at one time.
Was that a bigger business or a way of life than cattle? Or were they about, did cattle always stay?
Well, cattle were always here. There was always cattlemen and all. But the sawmills, they had terrific payroll.
Mm-hmm.
The one big sawmill, Montezuma Lumber Company, well, that was more or less in town. But the big Hebler-Hamlin sawmill, which was up on north and west, I believe, of where Roy and Elaine live.
Mm-hmm.
And that, they would have several hundred teams of horses. Well, you had to have men to drive
team.
Yeah. They had to cut, there had to be men to cut the logs, men to skid the logs, men to trim the logs, men to take them to the market, and then when they got it to the mill, then there was men that had to saw it, men that had to see that it was taken to the railroad siding to go on to the come on down to meet the big train.
What kind of saws did they use? I'm sure they didn't have power saws.
Yeah, they had power
saws. Did they?
Well, not like you'd think somebody coming here to cut my tree with the power saw. Not that kind of. They were big, big sawmill operation. Oh, they were huge things. Huge boilers and huge machines.
Mm-hmm.
And then ever so often, nearly every sawmill that ever was around burned at one time or another. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they'd rebuild it, they'd have insurance enough, and sometimes they just didn't ever go back into business. Mm-hmm. It was dangerous because they had burned their sawdust and chaff and stuff, you know, and then just a spark on a windy day like today and land somewhere up in some dry stuff, and nobody would see it till it was
gone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But sawmilling hired lots and lots of men. I knew quite a bit about that because my dad worked for Cooper's Sawmill and for Dean's Sawmill and for Hamlin and Hebler's Sawmill. In fact, he was working for Cooper's Sawmill at the time that I was born, and we lived up there north and east of where Everett's are now, up there towards Bob Coppinger's.
Yeah.
That's where they were living when I was born. Yeah. That's where they were living. Dad was working for Cooper's Sawmill at the time I was born.
Mm-hmm.
Then we moved down the river after that. But sawmilling was a big business. And then there were lots of prospectors, lots of people doing mining up in the mountains. Nobody ever got very rich that I ever knew anything about, but mm-hmm. only some of these swindlers that came in, and somebody managed to talk somebody into that had a lot of money, didn't have very much gumption, and they paid these big prices for these mines that were kind of, sometimes they were, what did they call it? They'd salt a mine, you know. They had a little bit of gold and they put it in there and make it look like the whole thing.
Oh, dear.
That was done.
Yeah.
There were tricks. But there were a lot of people up in the mountains around from 1895 to 1910. There was a lot of excitement. The newspapers were just full of them.
Now, who owned the first newspaper here in Mancos?
I think it was a fellow by the name of Danforth, W.C. Danforth. Mm-hmm. And he didn't keep it very long. And then he sold it to a fellow by the name of Kelly. And then I think the next one was Ira Freeman.
Okay, I remember.
And you remember. Yeah. You probably remember of him at least.
Yes.
And he was editor for a long, long time. Down at the Visitor Center now, and I was just looking today, they've got a lot of that old type from the old Mancos Times office
good,
here in town.
Oh, good,
and,
good.
And quite a bit, some of the printing stuff and all, I didn't look it all over too much. It was just too much to see, and I was mm-hmm. busy with people. But that was interesting.
I'm glad, because mm-hmm. you know that newspaper office stays shut up all the time, and it's got some old, beautiful. It'd be fun to have that be opened through the Mancos Visitor Center, if you could take people for a tour.
Well, except that you couldn't hardly get enough people to volunteer for what we've got going now.
You'd have to have a volunteer to watch.
They've got a lot of the type up there.
That's great.
And stuff mm-hmm. like that and mm-hmm. all. And some of the first early, some copies of some of the very first early issues of the paper.
Well, now, what about your family? Are you the oldest or youngest?
I'm the oldest of four kids. Hmm. My mother died when I was 13. I was the oldest of four. She'd had an operation, got peritonitis, blood poisoning. We couldn't do anything about it.
And you were all in Mancos at that time?
Yeah, we lived here. I'd never been out of Mancos before.
Now, where would be the hospital? Was there a hospital
in
or
Cortez.
A doctor?
In Cortez. She'd had the operation on a Friday in Cortez. Huh. And I told Dad I wasn't going to go to school that day. I just knew Mother wasn't ever going to come back. I just had that feeling, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when they operated, then the doctor went off somewhere to deliver a baby. And he came back very tired. Well, Mother knew she wasn't well. This had been on, she was operated on Friday. This is on Saturday night, and she told the nurse, I'm very ill.
Mm-hmm.
You must get the doctor. Well, we can't bother him. He's been up all day and all night with delivering a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't get the doctor till the next morning. Well, she was just full of gangrene.
Oh, boy.
And that was before they had sulfa drugs.
Yeah.
So she died. Anyway, then I had promised Mother that I would help Dad raise the four kids, or the other three, you know, because mm-hmm. she had to raise myself too. And so that's, and then I lived on that place down there that Graff owns it now, across the road from Orgish's.
Okay.
Stayed there till we were married.
Now, four kids. Mm-hmm. There's you.
And then I don't think you know any of my brothers. And my brother Carlisle lives in Bountiful, Utah. And he came down this winter, and we spent a month and wrote a book about the old Weber Hall, which was the Weber Church.
Mm-hmm.
Big two-story building. And
any sisters?
And then I had two sisters. He's the youngest. I had a sister 2 years younger than me, Leah, and she never did marry, and she worked for Radio Corporation of America in California for 20, 30 years.
Huh.
And she died out there in 1978, 79, something like that. And then I have a sister, Pauline, married Cecil John. He was from here then at that time. And then they lived, he was a veterinarian for the state of Utah, became mm-hmm. a state veterinarian. And he died a few years ago, just about 6 months before my husband Vernon died.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's our family. Then I had four kids.
Oh, no, I want you to talk about your four kids.
Well.
They were all born and raised in Mancos, right?
Yes, Daryl was born in that old house up there on the highway where we lived. And and Dr. Trotter and Vernon went to town and brought Dr. Trotter out in the buggy to deliver the baby there in that old house. And then the next boy, Jude, was born there also in that house. And I liked to die at that time. Dr. Trotter came out, and I'd been in labor a long time. The folks were butchering hogs that day. It was the day that the grandma said it was time to butcher the hogs.
So
but I decided it was a day to have the baby.
That's right.
So they had to go get Vernon away from the hog killing event to have him hook up the horses to the buggy and go to town to get Dr. Trotter, because we'd had so much moisture that winter, so much snow and all, the roads were impassable, and they couldn't even get through with the mail, only on horseback.
Oh.
Our mail was delivered for about 3 weeks by a man on horseback. Well, anyway, so he brought the doctor out. Well, the doctor was tired because he'd been somewhere else delivering a babe. This is about the time that Serena's...
David. Right.
David and Jeter, almost the same age. They're just a few days different. Well, anyway...
What year?
1937.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so... So he went and brought the doctor out, and of course that they had the neighbors helping with the butchering, so Vernon didn't have to be there, but Vernon was kind of aggravated that I had to choose that day to have the baby. But the doctor only had one arm at that time. He'd had an arm taken off a year or two or three before that. Got infection when he operated on somebody's tonsils. And, well,
wow.
You know, those things happened in those days. They didn't have the antiseptics and the, and the antibiotics and things they have today. Well, anyway, Dr. Trotter came out, and he said, well, you've been in labor long enough. You should have that baby right away. But he had new kind of medicine. I don't know what it was. He said, well, we're going to get this over with, because he was tired. And so he gave me a shot of whatever it was, and everything came at once.
Oh.
After birth, the baby, everything just shot out of me, tore me all to pieces. And if it hadn't been for Vernon's sister, who was there with me at the time, I would have died. Mm. And she had presence of mind enough. No, you know, I passed out. I didn't know anything.
Oh, yeah.
To get some whiskey. Grandma always kept a little bottle of whiskey in her bureau drawer.
Thank goodness.
And she got that and forced it between my teeth because Dr. Trotter did not know what to do. It scared him to death.
Oh,
it was new medicine. He'd never used it before.
Mm.
He didn't do it. He was careful before.
Probably never. Yes, right.
But anyway, so that one was born at home. But by the time we had the next one, we waited 7 years. Didn't have any more babies, and I wanted a baby, another baby, Vernon didn't really, but I did. Anyway, we had Ron, but we went to Durango, and his old, I was calling the horse doctor, this is going down into perpetuity, or whatever you call it, for future generations. Anyway, we always called him the horse doctor, old Dr. Razor. He'd been a doctor out at McPhee, and he'd come from down in New Mexico, and, well, he was really a rough old guy. I guess he was pretty good. But so we went to Durango and had Ron. And then we wanted him especially, you know. But then, 18 months later, we had Maureen.
Oh, neat.
And we went to Cortez and had her. And it was during World War II. And there were no doctors anywhere around. There was no doctor at all in Mancos. So we had to go over there. Old Dr. Speck was a doctor, company doctor out at McPhee Reservoir at that time. He was an old man. His son had been taken in the service. They just drafted the doctors, you know. So here was old Dr. Speck. And but you know, I got along just fine anyway. So we had her over there.
Well,
that was our four kids.
And now, they were all raised and went to school in Mancos?
They all graduated from Mancos. And all four of Daryl's kids graduated from Mancos High School. And now he's got his grandkids are going to school. My great-great-grandkids are...
Oh, that's great.
Or in school. And see, my goes clear back to my parents. My dad didn't go to high school because in those days, well, they were poor.
Mm-hmm.
And he got through the eighth grade and got an eighth grade diploma. Which was
a lot then. It was probably almost like a high school education today.
Right. My mother graduated here, and she went to college up at Gunnison for 2 years, and then she taught school for 2 years before they were married. And so we've been in Mancos schools a long, long time. I used to say they couldn't have a band in Mancos unless there was an Ellis or a Decker in it, but I believe they've got it. I believe they had a band without an Ellis or a Decker in it this year.
No.
Yeah. after all these years. Well, that was just the thing we used to claim that. Cause
yeah, that's great.
We just had them here for so long, you know.
I'm glad we still have a band.
Oh, and they had a pretty good band. And finally, they had a chorus this year.
Oh, that's good.
Had, I think, 7 or 8 young men sang with them. And I was so proud of them all. And because I made a fuss a long time because they didn't have singing in school.
Now, how are you, how are you related to Johnny Decker?
Johnny Decker's dad and my dad were brothers. And did you know Jerry Decker?
Yes.
Well, Jerry was a cousin. His dad was our dad's brother,
okay,
too. His dad was Earl. John's was Morris. Mine was Neil. And Al Decker and Sybil.
Okay.
Al's dad was Bill Decker.
And they all must have written and said, hey, this is great. Come on out here to the Magus
Valley. They were little kids when they came with the parents. See,
And stayed.
And they stayed here. Of course, they had one brother who moved to Salt Lake and became and went to school and became a well-known dentist.
Mm-hmm.
And he was head of the National Dentists Association for all of western part of the United States for many, many years.
Oh, that's great.
Very, very well-known. But he was the only one that ever went off and did it.
Uh-huh.
They had 2 or 3 sisters that married and moved away from here. So that's just about the story of our lives. My mother's family, the Hammonds, they had 9 kids. Frank Hammond was sheriff at Montezuma County for
many years. Oh, I remember that name,
yeah.
Are there any Hammonds still around?
No.